Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. If this is the first time you are listening to us or seeing us, this is our 100th episode, and welcome to the club. If you've been listening to us for this entire 100 episode run, thank you so much. Of course, my name is Jacqueline Coley, alongside my co-host, Mr. Mark Ellis.
I'm having some cake. It even though we're only turning like two, you know, it still feels like a huge accomplishment, because if you get 10 episodes of something under your belt, it means that you're trying a new endeavor. Good for you. You're putting in the work. Once you get to 100, it kind of means that you did something, that you made your mark with what you were trying to do, and you had fans support it. Because I don't know that any show gets to 100 unless you have people on the other end of that show that are listening and watching and receiving the message. So we appreciate each and every one of our Fresh Ketchup crew members for getting us to this point. 100 episodes, Jacqueline. We really have talked about a lot of movies.
Yeah, it's really crazy too to think about it. Again, as I say this to anyone listening here, and this is episode for those listening, this is where we're going to get as candid as you're going to get. We, for the most part, try to keep it focused on the show, keep it focused on the movies. But I am always surprised to the beautiful few of you that have come up to me in public, because I am not a touring comic. So I see people in very limited and rare occasions where they're not there and have not paid money to see me, like my co-host Mark. And so when anyone comes up to me and be like, I love the podcast, my first reaction, I feel bad, is like, who told you about it? Like, I'm always just like, I feel like this is just, I know, I feel like this is a secret thing me and Mark do. But this episode, what Lucy and Brian did to prepare for it, and then also just being out in the world more, I know that this podcast is reaching way more people than I can ever possibly fathom. I just heard word yesterday we're close to 1 million streams. That means like a million different people have at least listened to our voice. That's nuts. That's crazy. And it's all you guys. It is not, again, I'm just talking to my buddy who I know and would talk about this stuff with all the time. And we bring in some other buddies on top of it. And so the fact that you guys have made this something that we get to do for his 100 episodes is really incredible, and why we wanted to include you in this episode. So we're really going to break down exactly what you guys have said, talk about some movies of yours that we haven't covered. We're going to spend a lot of time in the mailbag. But before we do that, Mark, let's see, like, it's a weird time for both of us. We're both approaching a birthday. You just came back from Vegas. The world is like opening back up again. It's crazy to think that our podcast is still continuing, knowing that like we made this in the dark of the pandemic, and now it feels like a million miles away.
It was like a kernel of a seed of a piece of popcorn, I think, as the pandemic was happening. And then it's like, well, we're still going full steam ahead. We want to do this show. Jack and I have been wanting to do this show forever together. And so finally, it's like we have our baby. But oh, here's a fun sort of caveat. You can't be in the same room as the other person. And just the fact that we were able, I think it's a credit to not you or me necessarily, but just the way that we work together with that other, you know, special magic that we have when we're talking with one another, that it can work through a pandemic and through a computer and through cameras and microphones without us physically being around each other. Although, just as it happens, you and I saw a movie last week, and before I went to Vegas, And we were just kind of like talking and reminiscing. Some tea was spilled about various things in our lives personally, but it was almost like we were toasting. I had an adult beverage. I had a beer. Jacqueline had some sort of weird alcoholic smoothie thing that looked like a lot of fun, but I just stick with
it. He was so shading me, ladies and gentlemen. The minute I came in, I'm going to tell the real tea. We went to a hotel that has a bar and a restaurant at the bottom of it. Mark mm-hmm. orders a beer like the man that he is, because he's an IPA. Man and he's 40.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
And I, like the lost babe in Toyland, the committed,
dainty lass.
Yeah, the committed to arrested development. I am never going to grow up. I ordered an adult milkshake and I skipped my way to the bathroom after I ordered it. It was great. It was banana and banana liqueur. And I mm-hmm. enjoyed every inch of it, especially Mark's very much enjoying but slightly disapproving face. Like, that cannot be good for either the alcohol or the ice cream.
Well, maybe in the future, this is producer Lucy, hello. Congrats, Mark and Jacqueline. Maybe in the future, we, first off, will get together in the same room one day. It okay. is going to happen.
Deal.
We will be in the same room. It's going to be that much more fun. And who's to say I won't have an alcohol budget so we can all drink while we're doing the show?
I mean,
I'll get you adult milkshakes, Jacqueline, and Mark, I'll get you Coors Light.
I mean, I like this promise.
The way that we should play it is we'll tape the podcast sober and then we'll just do the same podcast with some libations
yes.
and then sort of match them up and see which version we actually want to be released out onto the street.
I think I may be California sober for that. Like, this is the weird thing. As I get older, I'm like, booze just does not hold the same sway for me at all. Even beer. Like, none of it holds the same luster. And I look now at a gin and tonic as like, this could go very wrong.
Jacqueline's so got a cool, Jacqueline's, you know, she's made it in life because she's got like a really cool, what do you call those? Like those alcohol carts at her place where it's got like all the fancy liquors and stuff. And I have an alcohol cart. You know what's on it right now? A bunch of mail and my modem. That's what's on my alcohol cart, because the rest of it, it's just in the fridge, chilling in a silver bullet casing. So the way that we get encouraged by the occasional adult beverage is sort of the way that producer Lucy wrangles us and our expert engineer, Brian, as well. Just it really is a team that makes this ship go. And Jacqueline and I, like she said, we just get to show up. And this is the easiest part of our day. It's the folks behind the scenes and everybody who has supported us here on the Rotten Tomatoes side of things. And obviously gets out into the world and then the fans get to listen. And the fact that so many of y'all have stayed with us for so long, and you write us letters, you send us videos, you send us audio clips, and we're going to get to a lot of that today. It's sort of a celebration of not just Jacqueline and I, it's all of us, that includes you, our Fresh Ketchup crew members. So to get things rolling, it's our favorite segment because we get to take a break for 2 minutes, but this is a very special 2 minutes with Tim. Because we are going to turn it over to our expert review curation manager, Tim Ryan, who has been a big part of the show since its inception. And we usually have like a little music cue that we play that is sung by producer Lucy. But guess what, folks? It's a special day. It's the 100th episode of Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. And so without further ado, now stepping to the stage, producer Lucy.
Okay, here we go. I'm forgetting what I was going to say. Hold on.
It's four words.
I know. I know, but I came up with this in the shower last night. So I was like, okay, don't mess it up. And now I'm butchering
it. Oh, it's a new version. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. 100 times, 100 times, 100 times we did. 100 times, 100 times we did 100 two mins with Tim.
Woo!
Wow.
More talent in that one verse than I've showed in my entire 100 episodes on this show.
First of all, if this podcast has done nothing else, it's giving me a theme song. Like, I don't know if I'm going to like use this theme song in any other context, but like having a theme song is something that, I don't know, not everyone can claim. I'm like there with like the Monkees or something, you know? So that's cool. It's funny that like when we started doing this podcast, it was in the middle of the pandemic, and now we're tiptoeing out and it's still going, which is really cool. You know, I just want to say thank you to Jacqueline and Mark, obviously, but especially Producey Lucy, because, you know, it's one of those things where every week when we do this, we just sort of sit around, we shoot the breeze, and she helps fashion this into an actual segment, which is kind of incredible. Shameless self-promotion, but we've also been working on a project called RT Archives, in which we're doing this thing where we're collecting and aggregating reviews of films, classic films, when they came out. And I feel like in some ways this has been an extension of that, the podcast, where we are talking about what the reaction to the critical reaction to movies were when they came out. So that's been really fun. Anyway, and from what I understand, some people like this segment. So thank you very much. And I hope I've done a good job. And yeah. Thank you. And hope we keep doing this for a while.
Oh, my gosh. He is
Was
such...
Tim at the dentist? I think he had some laughing gas going on.
No,
there.
Actually, I can tell you, Tim, because I've known Tim now for 5 years. I'm sure Lucy maybe prepped him or not, but Tim was just hilariously laughing at the fact that he was going to get to talk about himself. Because the thing you don't know about Tim is he's incredibly long-winded, but the man is also incredibly selfish. And as much as this segment is 2 minutes with Tim, he is so uncomfortable with the idea of it being anything about him. Yeah. That he like laughs at the premise. And excuse me if I'm wrong, Lucy, knowing Tim, that is probably exactly what he was laughing at.
Oh my gosh. I mean, and I think you meant selfless.
Selfless. Yes. Sorry. Selfless. Not selfish.
Selfish.
No, he is selfless. Selfless. No, yeah.
You nailed it. That's exactly right. He's the most humble person in the world. And this whole thing has been just sort of mind-blowing for him, I think, because he's like, what? I'm on this podcast doing this segment. And there have been several times where he's tried to be like, don't you want somebody else? And I'm like, no, you're doing this forever. You're staying with us forever, Tim.
Yeah.
You're going nowhere.
And I agree with you, because for folks that don't know about Tim, too, I'm going to take this opportunity for you guys to get to know about him. Tim has been one of the more longer-running employees of Rotten Tomatoes and started as a curator, but did so much more. Back when Rotten Tomatoes first came about, like, if you think the team is lean now, I need to talk to you about way back when. I mean, it was literally Tim, Alex, Ryan, Matt Achety, Gray, and like two other people running that entire site, including our head of VP of content now, Julio. And they've been through 6 ownerships and the whole time just trying to keep the reviews going, trying to make sure the site did what it needed to do, trying to get critics certified and put on the tomato meter. And those have now been like sort of handed out into various people. But back in the original days, they all did a little bit of that. And so when I tell you Tim Ryan has probably read over 10 million reviews, that's a low estimate.
And he would go out of his way back in the early Schmoes days when we were certified with the tomato meter. He would go out of his way to kind of like watch our videos to take pieces from that and sort of apply that as our quote about the movie. And so that really was a shot in the arm for us. And Tim Ryan, selfless, is a great way to describe him, even though I think he's getting a little cocky now because he's got his own theme song. And it's,
I mean, and he's allowed to, honestly. Yeah. There's so many nameless and faceless people that work at Rotten Tomatoes that are a part of not just this podcast, but the entire brand that don't get, I would say, the visibility that folks like me and Mark get, because we get the fun stuff. You know, we get to go and do, you know, Mark, I'm going to shout Mark out a little bit. He had a great piece in Golf. It was a Golf magazine.
A Golf magazine, yeah.
Yeah, Golf magazine that he did for us here, because ladies and gentlemen, he's not just a microphone jockey. He actually is a very accomplished writer who I thank my lucky stars every day decides to be a yuck monkey. And I say that with love and affection, that
it's true.
His favorite thing in the world is to just go and tell jokes in front of drunks. Like, that is what he loves to do. And I love him for it, because if he ever tried to be a writer, I would be out of a job because he's so much better at it.
this is all encouraging me to go down a dark path from which I would never return. So your job is safe. And I am glad that you do not get on stage, because you're much more likable and funnier than I am. So this is just a nice self pat on the back for all of us here at Rotten Tomatoes and the show Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong, a podcast by Rotten Tomatoes. Remember when we used to intro it like that?
We
had to make sure that people knew
that we were in on
Rotten
the joke.
Tomatoes.
That is actually one of the funniest things of the early days of people, like everybody in the audience, I think, is like, yeah, we get it. But they were so worried about that. It's like, we have to let them know we're in on the joke. I'm like, I think the podcast lets them know we're in on the joke.
Pretty sure the fact we're on the Rotten Tomatoes feed helps. But regardless, And so now we're going to celebrate our Fresh Ketchup crew members. And these are some of our finest minds that write us, that send us messages, audio, visual. They email us, rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com, and they give us their thoughts on movies, what we've talked about, and they are the reason why we are at 10 episodes, much less 100 episodes. So, Brian, as you're the best at doing, hit the music. And kicking us off here is our very first fan, Danielle Kester. And Danielle has been one of the, maybe the MVP of our show here, because Danielle always gives us feedback, always tells us other movies that we should be checking out. And so Danielle, here's Danielle's thoughts.
Hey gang, congratulations on 100 episodes of the podcast. And the film that I think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong about is 2008's Speed Racer, which is not only a one-of-a-kind visual masterpiece, but shows what a passion project from directors really can be. It has a great cast, a great story, and it's a feel-good movie. I absolutely think it should be a fresh movie. Not only that, but certified fresh. Congratulations again on 100 episodes of the podcast, and I can't wait to hear more. Sincerely, Danielle Kessner, a.k.a. Racer X Jump. Jacqueline and Mark, back to you.
Oh, with the throw!
Racer with X Jump. That's a professional podcaster right there, Jack.
That is
great. We have a competition now with our fan favorite, Danielle. Before we give our thoughts on Speed Racer, though, I hear we have somebody else that wants to chime in. Another fan favorite of ours, Tyler Harper. So, Tyler, we'll turn it over to you.
I've made this video about four or five times and realized that I have way too much to say in just a minute. But a shout out to everybody at Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong, Producey Lucy, Jacqueline, Mark, you guys are great. Congratulations on the 100th show. I could listen to you guys forever, so I hope it continues. My film that I want to talk about is Speed Racer. I've sent emails about it already complaining that it is too low on Rotten Tomatoes, and it is 41%. It should be around 70. It's not like 100 or 90% by any means, but it is a fun movie, a beautiful movie, one with an awesome father-son story that really touches me, and I can relate to that a lot. And it has a great car. It's beautiful. It is colorful. It is well done. It is just like the anime brought to life. And that's what you look for in a movie. Something that is entertaining, colorful, fun. And I could watch it over and over again. Congratulations on 100. Here's to more.
All right. There's Tyler and Danielle. They're really making me think here, Jacqueline, because every time I consider like, oh man, you know, I do hear a lot of people love Speed Racer now. I just don't know if I can make that investment, because when I saw it in the Dolby, in the Microsoft Theater. Sitting right behind me was Slash, by the way, from Guns N' Roses with his kids. So that was pretty cool. And I just remember it was like visually and the audio was just so overwhelming, and it was cool, but it was also, it just felt like work. So, but if Danielle and Tyler say that it should at least be fresh, I think we have to give it another shot, right?
Okay. Yes and no, okay. Because it's a movie out of time. If this movie was made in 1968, it would be certified fresh with like the biggest advertisements to ever do it. But coming out when it came out, it's so cringy in certain aspects. So I get why people didn't do it. But visually, like any movie that I give this compliment, which means you can enjoy this with the sound off, is a movie that has done something spectacular visually. Mm. And Speed Racer is that. So while I absolutely agree it's a movie that does not in any way get interpreted for the brilliance that it is, the reception that it has, I understand. All I would be willing to say is we've got to get it to fresh. I don't know if I can get it to where Danielle and Tyler think it should go, but I'm going to at least get on the bus to where they're going to push it as close to that place as I can.
I see what you're doing. All right, you're making me the bad guy in our 100th episode. All right, I'm sticking with it. 41% until I see otherwise.
Yeah, I gave you a wishy-washy one on that one because I really do like that movie. I love the way that it looks. I like the campiness of it. I love the beautifulness of it. I love just the commitment of everyone involved in that movie, because it was a completely green screen movie when they barely had dots that they were looking at. That is a commitment movie, but no. I don't know if I can call it certified fresh.
I would put it in that,
like I'd put it a little bit different. This is what's great though, because we have another episode, we have another fan video. And so let's go ahead and take a look at what Zion Silver has to say about a film that he thinks that we should know about.
All right. Hey, all you Rotten Tomatoes fans out there like me. I love the podcast, Mark and Jacqueline, and you know, I've got one great suggestion for a movie that I think gets a really, really unfair shake, and that is Waterworld. It is one of my favorite movies of all time, and like, I know it's ridiculous. Kind of a crazy premise, obviously. Some of Kevin Costner's worst acting ever, but I love it. The action sequences alone are amazing. Just the whole vibe that's going on with it, his trimaran that he just flies around in, kicking butt and taking names. It's just so good. It's so good. Dennis Hopper plays a great bad guy. And I really, honestly, in my heart, I believe it is a fresh movie at its core. Not super fresh, but fresh. So you should take a look at it. All right. Thanks.
I really love that he had his pool in the background. He's committing to the Waterworld theme.
At the end of his vid, I thought Zion was just going to jump in the pool and just be like, watch, I have gills too.
I mean, I will say that is the cinematic sign off. But, you know, the guy did do Waterworld, so he probably wanted to do it and ran out of budget and time. Oh, that's a joke.
What a burn from the inflated budget.
I can make that burn because he heard me talk about this, I'm sure, about Waterworld. Waterworld gets a bad rap on how bad it was. Waterworld gets a bad rap on the fact that it did make money and it actually did break even. Waterworld, if it was directed by a director who didn't quit in the middle of it, would have probably been a great movie. Like, this is a movie that, like, this and John Carter are movies that I'm like, the fact that they gave you a product, you guys should be happy, because these movies had issues in the production of them that made them very expensive. So I'm on board with Waterworld being higher. I really am.
I love the post-apocalyptic feel of it. And I love that there's so many times when you see a movie that's dystopian in the future, it's just a bunch of sand. I like water. I really like water. And I like that we're just floating and that's the thing. And then there's that great, great sequence that SNL took and ran with when Dana Carvey was playing Ross Perot and he was referring to Waterworld and he said, I really got to pay $8 to watch Kevin Costner drink his own urine. Like, he pees in this contraption and then he's able to drink his own pee. And that's how, I guess, you survive in this weird water world that we live in. So Waterworld is currently, it is 45%.
Yeah, okay. 45% okay. Rotten, 43% audience score on the 1995 Waterworld, which is
I'll bump it up. I'll bump Waterworld up a little bit. I'll get it to fresh adjacent. I'll get it up to like 58%.
That's fair. I would put it in the low 60s. I think I'm with Zion. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Also, it's the greatest thing you can do at Universal Studios in Hollywood. I go to that show like 3 times when I go once a year. It's Waterworld. I just took my 4-year-old and she was terrified.
It's a show?
Yeah.
It's the best show. Mark, I'm taking you as a guest next time I go.
Do I get wet? I mean, I want a Waterworld water ride.
Yeah.
There's fire. There are people like flipping off of high platforms.
It's basically Cirque du Soleil with water acrobatics.
Yeah. No, I don't do that. I don't do stunt shows.
Did you go to Backdraft?
I don't do stunt shows. No. I don't want to be there when something goes wrong. Then it's awkward. Then the rest of my day is ruined. I don't do stunts.
You know what this reminds me of? There's a bad episode. Not a bad episode. There's an episode of the IT Crowd where he goes on a date with a girl. And she said, and she's just like, my parents died in a fire. And he's just like, what do you mean? She's like, they died in a fire at SeaWorld. And she won't explain. And he's upset because he's like, how did they die in a fire at SeaWorld? Yeah. Like, how? And she's just like, I don't want to talk about it. And it's like a whole thing with this girl. And so whenever I hear any, like, I don't know, water show thing, I just think, well, if somebody died in it, would you question whether or not they could have died in a fire?
I don't do Cirque du Soleil. I don't do shuttle launches. I don't do air shows. I don't go where there's a risk.
Are you a Challenger kid? Are you a Challenger kid?
I don't remember watching it like live. I don't think we did, but I couldn't pinpoint what exactly was the thing in my life that ruined me from watching people attempt stunts live. But I'm just Universal. No, I'm just there to ride rides and drink butterbeer. I'm good.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people say that the Challenger kids have an inherent distrust for government enterprise. There's like a study of them. If you were a kid who watched that. And so I'm wondering if like spectacle shows is like the other side of it. Because I'm not going to lie to you. If I was a second grader and they made this whole big show of we're going to watch this thing and we're going to like get you together and they're going to make it like a stunt show and then somebody died, I'd be upset. I'd be like, what is this? But
do not trust them.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let's get to the next one.
Let's move on to Paul Bratz. What do you got for us, Paul?
Hi, guys. First of all, congratulations on 100 episodes. I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I listen to it all the time. Secondly, I got an issue that's almost as infuriating as when Dusty Bottoms shot the Invisible Swordsman. I think Three Amigos is criminally underrated. There's a plethora of reasons why I would say so, but this video is only up to a minute long, so I have to make it short. But basically, you got Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, Martin Short, all in their prime. There are so many great one-liners and jokes and everything. It's definitely one of my top five favorite comedies. I love it, and I think, like I said, it's really, really underrated. So, what do you guys think? Maybe is it just me, or do you agree? What do you think? Oh, almost forgot. Thank you.
There it is.
I was really wondering. I was going to be slightly disappointed if we didn't get it.
That's a real fan. And yeah, I'll say the Three Amigos should be fresh. It is criminally underrated. It's only 45% rotten. Every year at our talent show, starting in middle school and going all the way up through high school, some group of dudes got up and did the Sweet Little Buttercup.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Honestly, I think with Three Amigos, the thing that I've heard a lot recently is Selena Gomez taking over for Chevy Chase, because say what you want to about the comedy legend, apparently he's not fun to work with on set if you ask the folks at Community. And so there's been talk of a Three Amigos remake with her.
I don't hate that idea.
I do like the Three Amigos too, but every time I hear it now, that's all I think of, is because now those three are just like, get them to host the Oscars. Get them in a movie together. Just put their like comedy legend vibe with Selena Gomez. Like seeing her now, like you can see the comedy wearing off on them.
When I was like a little kid, I remember we watched Three Amigos and I just didn't get, I still thought it was funny, but I didn't get the fact that they were like these movie stars pretending to be heroes. I never picked up on that until I watched the movie again. So it was like watching a brand new movie when I saw it as an adult. And yeah, Three Amigos definitely deserves more justice. And that's why we have this show. Thank you, Paul. And congratulations to your Milwaukee Bucks on last year's championship. The Warriors took it over this year, but y'all are going to be relevant for a long time. So who's next up?
Hello, Jacqueline, Mike, Lisa, Lucy, the whole RTS Vaughn crew. My name is Arthur, and I'm here to give my take on Blade Runner 2049, a movie that has 88% for critics and 81% for audiences, but I don't think it deserves those scores. It's slowly paced, and not in a good way, in a way that's boring. It's misogynist, the relationship between Ana de Armas and Ryan Gosling is creepy. And look, I do love the performances given by Ana de Armas and Dave Bautista, and I love the visuals. It's visually breathtaking and just atmospheric mood that it has all the way through. But just I just don't like it. It was a disappointment. So yeah, that's my take on Blade Runner 2049. Congratulations to you for everything you've accomplished up to this point, and I can't wait to tune into your 100th episode. Thanks. Bye.
What up, Arthur, man? I dig it, and I am been on record about Blade Runner 2049. I love Denny. That movie is amazing. The story, though, no.
I remember hearing some of those like snipes about the story, the misogynist angles that it had. I felt bad for Blade Runner 2049. I felt bad for the glorious city of San Diego, Because in the future, in 2049, it's a trash dump. That's where the rest of the world dumps its garbage, is in San Diego. And I remember seeing it, and San Diego had just lost the Chargers to LA. And it's like, can they not have anything? I guess they have sunshine, but apparently not in the future. It's just a trash dump. So enjoy seeing me at American Comedy Company and the La Jolla Comedy Store while you can, because in the future, it's just going to be a WALL-E wasteland.
Aw, but they also still have Comic-Con and SeaWorld. Just remember that. Comic-Con and SeaWorld makes a lot happen.
I don't talk about SeaWorld. My grandparents died in a fire there. I don't want to talk.
They also have the zoo. They also have the zoo.
Oh, no. My uncle got eaten by a bear there. Yeah, just a rough time. Anytime the Ellis's go out, bad stuff happens.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't want to watch depressed whales ever.
I know. Ever. I don't want to watch depressed whales either. I know, after Blackfish. It's still, they're still there, though, people. And people still go to it. Like, yeah, it's a huge amusement park. I am not endorsing it. I'm just saying that, like, maybe that's why it becomes a waste dump. Hey.
Blade Runner 2049. Visually stunning. Not quite the story that we were hoping for. So thank you, Arthur. Thanks for chiming in. I like it sometimes when it's a movie that's universally praised, and that's why people like Arthur here, they're like, not so fast. So let's move on to Bo Burris. What does Bo have to say? Do you like a movie too much, or do you not like a movie too much?
Hey, Jacqueline and Mark. I would love to hear your take on 2013's The Great Gatsby. I love this movie. I love the maximalism. I love that it's unapologetic. The colors are vibrant. The soundtrack is punchy. And you get this huge spectacle followed by a very cold, very abysmal and depressing ending. And I think that perfectly captures Fitzgerald's disillusionment with the Jazz Age. I'm confused at how so many critics didn't also get that message. I wouldn't argue it's a perfect film, though, by any stretch, but I love that it does this old Hollywood bigness so well. Like, it knows it's a show and it's a spectacle. And I think if you take things a little bit less seriously and really embrace that spectacle, it's a crazy enjoyable experience. Anyways, huge fan of the show. Thanks for all your hard work, and I look forward to hearing your take.
I might just be a dummy, Jacqueline. I've never heard the term maximalist before. I get it, because you hear minimalist way too much. I've never heard maximalist.
I think the modern term for people without the vocabulary that Bo has would just call it extra, but it is the extra vibe. Like, just this, like, the grandeur of it, the opulence of it. Like, I would call that the opulence of it. The idea, like, why would you go and get a Tesla when you can get a Rolls Royce? That is maximalist.
Yeah, it's the difference between a white wall and, like, Damask in navy with, like, Sherlock Holmes, the Benedict Cumberbatch, his apartment is kind of maximalist.
Yes.
If you think all the books and the things.
Yeah, all the books, all the things, and all of them have to be ornate and glamorous and appreciative in their value as opposed to depreciative or less than.
I will go with Bo then, that if that's what the movie was trying to do, it knocked it out of the park. I live like a minimalist. I'm looking at my apartment and I think it's finely decorated. Some other people may think there's just not enough crap on the walls, and that's the way I like it. Old sport. Hey, The Great Gatsby 2013 did give us probably, I would say, like a top 10 most used gift, though.
Yes.
Of DiCaprio just like holding the glass up. Yeah, so it gave us something.
It gave us something. It gave Jay-Z writing basically jazz covers. It very much had a lot of really cool things going for it. I would say if you love Gatsby, you're going to love Elvis. And if you had problems with Gatsby, you're really not going to like Elvis. Because he just basically took Gatsby, gave it a whole bunch of then legal cocaine and said, here's another movie.
I got to see Elvis.
Is that also the song where it's the Lana Del Rey, like, will you still love me when I'm...
Yeah, no, it's he did an entire contemporary soundtrack for both those films, and that's usually his trademark. Going back to Romeo and Juliet with doing The Cardigans, Love Fool in the middle of Romeo and Juliet, and Kissing You by Desiree, and all these like modern, you know, ballads and things like that. But that's Baz Luhrmann for you. So, Bo, I don't disagree with you. Baz, he knows his stuff. We're actually going to go to Fariz Sidute.
Hey, Rotten Tomatoes, happy 100th episode of the podcast. So... back to the topic, when the Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. The newest one, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. It was bad. It's supposed to be rotten. The story is not there. The horror, yes. the title is not determine how the movie goes. I think that's the most bad news about that movie. The title, not what the movie is supposed to be. And the story, not quite well, not quite deeper. There is no fun in it, like the MCU formula. I just don't get it why it don't get rotten. So yeah, thank you.
Fariz, sir. Well, you kind of hit, sir, around about the thing that said, Doctor Strange 2 is a Sam Raimi movie. It's not an MCU movie. And I give it up for the man, because only Sam Raimi can come into the MCU and say, no, I'm going to do it my way. And get to do it in a big way, because I don't think necessarily that he was dictatorial in saying what he was going to do. I think they gave him a framework, and being that he's Sam Raimi, he figured out a way how to make it the most Sam Raimi thing in that framework.
And it's very odd, too, because you had a director, Scott Derrickson, who had done the first one, depart the project. And then Sam Raimi comes in and it seems like just makes a Sam Raimi movie. So I understand that. I don't care if I'm watching a Sam Raimi movie or an MCU movie. I don't feel anything. Nothing really grabbed me. None of the, and again, we know how I feel about children, but none of the Wanda desperately wanting kids so bad that she's just going to break the worst spoke to me at all. So that's probably a Mark Ellis thing, not necessarily a movie thing, but I have heard from people that they didn't feel like her character alignment was necessarily on the same track as what we got with WandaVision, which was a highly acclaimed show. So I don't know. I just, you know, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness just did not do it for me.
Yeah. WandaVision, when they announced that movie was coming out first, I already knew that there was trouble, just because I knew the way that the rest of the schedule was. And the fact that they, again, I'm just enamored that they kept it somewhat coherent by the end of it. Because when you have a television show that was essentially trying to do, like, the way it was supposed to go is there was Multiverse of Madness and then there was WandaVision. The fact that it ended up being WandaVision and Multiverse of Madness, now looking at those two movies, how were they ever going to be any other way? And if they were originally that other way, how much did they change to get to be this? I guess that's a testament to Kevin Feige and those guys, because they knew when they made the move that they were sort of writing themselves into a corner. So I do get what Freeze is saying, though, but I think that's more of a, I don't even think it's an MCU thing. It's just a Sam Raimi thing.
I just, you know, I see Doctor Strange and even the new Thor, which I had a lot of fun with. When we did that snap at the end of Endgame, I think it snapped me out of something. I'm waiting for something to snap me back in so I get more invested in the MCU again, just because.
Well, that will happen. It'll be Black Panther. It'll be Black Panther.
I hope so.
I mean, if it does it, it might be this whole Van Halen thing again, where it's like, we may need to reevaluate our friendship, but I'll let you make that choice when you get there.
Well, here to rescue us then is our next fan, who is Luke Guerin.
Hi, I'm Luke Guerin, part of the Ketchup crew from Fredericksburg, Virginia. And I'd like to ask Mark and Jacqueline if they've seen it, what their opinion is on RoboCop 2. Me and my sister watched it recently, and we're trying to guess what the Rotten Tomatoes score would be. And we're thinking 50% at the lowest, but both audience and critics rated it in the 20s and 30s. And it wasn't a perfect movie, but neither of us can imagine a world where people liked the first one and didn't like the second one. It felt like it improved on all bases, and was just a really enjoyable movie. So I just wanted to see what your opinions on it might be. And congratulations on the 100th episode.
Thank you, Luke. And shout out to Fredericksburg, Virginia. I'll see you walking around those streets sooner rather than later. But like, here's the thing with RoboCop 2 that's so weird, is that RoboCop took a life of its own on after the movie came out, the first one that was directed by Paul Verhoeven, because you had the movie, which was like very dark satire, but then you had this cool looking character, RoboCop. And so I think a lot of people just looked at RoboCop and were like, oh, that's an action hero, so let's go see RoboCop 2. But RoboCop 2 was just more spoofiness. Like there's a drug dealer that's 9 years old who's dealing nuke in the movie. So how seriously are you going to take this? Maybe critics just took that one so seriously, whereas they appreciated the winks and the nods from the first one. I got to go back and watch it, Jacqueline.
I mean, I will say this. If you haven't watched it recently, I don't know if it's going to hold up. but I watched it for a bad movie podcast like 6 years ago. And I remember even at that time being like, what were they on?
Oh,
like,
that's
all I thought. Not that it was bad, but just definitely like, there's certain movies from the 80s and the 80s in general. And maybe it is because I have been reading a book a little bit about that time frame. And it's about Don Simpson, the guy that was the partner with Jerry Bruckheimer, and just basically how he died under a mountain of cocaine.
I got to read that book.
Yeah. Hollywood was a different time. It really was. These guys were just drugged out doing whatever it is that they wanted. And RoboCop is like a product of that time frame. So I'm not surprised the movie looks unhinged, but it's still fun.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we're pulling strings trying to get one light beer during the show. So
I mean, seriously, like this is
times
like
have changed.
Times have definitely changed. Let's go ahead and move on to our next one. Another film from 1990s, early 90s. We have Robert Drost, right?
Hi, Producey Lucy and the Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong crew. I'm calling because I would love for you guys to discuss The Mighty Ducks, the great hockey sports film of the early 90s that involved a alcoholic lawyer who was caught drunk driving and instead of going to jail was given community service in which he was tasked with turning around a small hockey team full of very unathletic teenagers who he was able to go from the worst team in the Minneapolis youth hockey team to one of the best in the state and spawn two sequels, a TV show, an NHL franchise. And I was surprised to learn that this movie had a 24% rotten scale on the Rotten Tomatoes meter. So I would love for you guys to be able to discuss this film and hopefully agree with me that that score is just absolutely wrong and should have been much higher. Because after all, who else did not love watching the flying V and hearing that great chant, quack, quack, quack. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
I particularly do love that he has the Mighty Ducks. And for Joshua Jackson Love, first initiated in that and held through Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
I will not stand for any shade or besmirchment to the Mighty Ducks franchise. That being said, don't ask me to ask you whether or not it's a good movie. Like, I can't answer the question. I really can't.
I think it's a good movie. I think it's definitely better than in the 20s on the tomato meter. It's a heartwarming.
Better than in the 20s. I will give you that. Better than in the 20s.
We're Bad News Bearsing it. We're Little Giantsing it. I think this came out before Little Giants. And it does have the distinction of being the only film ever, I think, to directly inspire a professional franchise name. Having said that, though, there's no way that Toronto gets a basketball team called the Raptors if Jurassic Park had not come out, because nobody knew what the hell a raptor or a velociraptor was until Jurassic Park taught us all. And then Toronto's like, hey, we got a basketball team.
Mark, I mean, maybe the owner of that team was really into dinosaurs.
Yeah, but he ain't going to get the marketing people to sign on to his crazy ambition. Even Jerry Jones has people that he has to be like, sir, no, we can't do that.
Yep.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're right. I could definitely see an owner being crazy enough, like Ross Geller reincarnated with $1 billion to say, we going to name it the Raptors. But
Ross Geller.
No, like marketing person is going to be like, sir, nobody knows what a raptor is. And honestly, I don't even think Toronto would name their thing the Raptors if it was actually portrayed realistically in the movie, because those things aren't that big.
No, they're tiny.
Raptors
but they
are like basically, you know, oversized dogs.
Scrappy.
Like corrected it as we moved on to that one. No, I'm with the Mighty Ducks Love. I think the audience score is a little bit closer to itself, but I am not going to say that it is definitely a fresh movie. Just because, too, you said it, Mark, yourself, it's just a remake of Bad News Bears. And I will find that with movies, if you can give yourself at least 5 good examples of great movies that did it well, you better do it really well if you're going to do the same thing. You know what I mean? And the drunken guy being over some kids, like, hey, and you know what they did it better? Bad Santa.
I was never a kid that wanted to party at a roller skating rink or an ice skating rink because I wasn't good on skates. There's one person I would lace them up for, and that person is Emilio Estevez, mainly because of Young Guns, but still, I would lace them up. Quack, quack, indeed. All right, let's go to this is our final video. Then we have some actual emails. Then we got some social media fun before we close up shop here on our 100th episode. I still can't believe I just said that. So let's turn it over to Connor Friedenborg. Connor, what do you want to talk about?
Hi, Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. My name's Connor. I'm calling you from Brussels, and I would love to hear you guys discuss the three new Godzilla movies by Legendary Pictures. I've been a fan of the franchise ever since I was a kid, and I thought the 2014 reboot was about as good of a reboot as a franchise could possibly have. While I think the second film's rotten score is fair, I still enjoyed the movie and acknowledge they made a passing attempt at story and character development while also having great action sequences. The third, Godzilla vs. Kong, I found borderline hard to sit through and was floored to see its certified fresh rating. Maybe people were bored in the pandemic, maybe Legendary has a great marketing team, or maybe I'm missing something, but certified fresh rating for that film is, as King Kong might say, simply bananas. Thank you for your time, and I'm looking forward to the episode.
I think Connor's on to something there because I do think we were really bored during the pandemic, and it was nice finally getting to see a huge movie on the big screen again, which was Godzilla versus Kong. Even I, who was really excited about that movie, 75% certified fresh, whereas King of the Monsters is only 42% rotten. I just felt bad for my guy, King Kong, during that movie, because every time there was a fight, King Kong was like coming out of a coma, or he was like strapped onto an aircraft carrier. He never got a fair look at Godzilla as full Kong. He was just like recovering. It's like if somebody broke into the hospital and started beating you up when you're in a cast. It's like, this isn't a fair fight.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely agree with you on that one. Also, is it Kong Skull Island is the one that is certified fresh of all of them, correct? That's the only one that got certified fresh?
No, you have Godzilla. And Godzilla versus Kong are both
Godzilla versus fresh. Kong. Yeah. Okay, I get it. Then in that case, yeah, I honestly don't get this because I thought maybe it was like, okay, they only gave it to the one. I will say 2014, though.
I love that movie.
I love that one. And so I don't know if it's necessarily that these ones are the ones that are going to be the ones that I would rail as bad against. So I'll give them that. There are worse Godzilla movies out there. I'll say that.
I just get so upset when people say Godzilla 2014 was boring. It reminded me of like Jaws, where you didn't see the shark all that much. It's not as good as Jaws. But when you do see Godzilla, whoo, definitely come to play.
That was a lie, as I like to tell people. Everyone thought they were getting a Bryan Cranston movie at the height of his Walter White powers. They duped us. And I literally was thinking to myself, do y'all know how many episodes of Breaking Bad they film? Like, he could not have been available for this show for that long. Like, you know what I mean?
I don't need him. I need Godzilla. That's all I
know
need.
You don't need him, but that's what people got mad about with that movie. I remember it had a backlash for that first, and then everything else just kind of piled on. Like, they wanted a Bryan Cranston movie. But that's not all we got. We also got some IG comments because we also asked you guys to tell us anything really that you wanted to kind of shout out about the podcast. And so we're going to go ahead and take a look at those next. Apologize for these handles really quick, folks, because I don't know what all of these are supposed to mean, but hopefully... Susie Tramwelt said, literally all Marvel movies are too high. I would say that your sentiment is in the minority, Susie, but I think it is now becoming the majority.
Yeah, I hate to say Susie's starting to win me over just a little bit. Not fully, but just a little bit. I still have my MCU phases that I adore. Kev1 says The Northman, 89%. ? That movie was terrible. Whoa, Kev, what did the Vikings do to you?
Wow, seriously.
I was in on the Northmen. I mean, I couldn't take my eyes off of those abs. But.
I didn't think it was terrible. I think that it was selling a false bill of goods on the marketing because it wasn't what it was advertising, but I like what I got. Then we have Niraj. Yeah, thank you. Niraj Mascale. I'm sorry if I got that wrong. He says Dark because all seasons should be 100. And I will say, I don't know what Dark Gang is or like the what they call the darkies, like the dark fandom. What do they call?
Oh my gosh. They are strong and they are loud and they are proud and they are passionate about Netflix's Dark.
Yes, they really are. But I don't know what they call themselves, but that crew is with you on that one.
Yeah.
You want to hear something fun?
Yeah. You never
heard
that.
Of it.
Oh my
never,
gosh.
Never
it's
even
foreign
heard of
language
it.
Or partially foreign language, right?
It's like German.
It's German, but they do part of it in English.
Time travel. Mark, I think you'd actually really like it.
I'm looking at it now. It seems like I love this.
It's kind of crazy and in a very good way. And the Rotten Tomatoes audience on our social media, it might be the favorite TV show of all time for them.
I'm in. Thank you, Niraj. And the good news for Susie and Kev is that there's no MCU and there's no Northman in that whatsoever. So, dark party at my house. All right, let's move on to Neil Brayman. And Neil says, the road to El Dorado at 48% is way too low. That movie had comedy, it was serious, and then had some bangers sprinkled into it. Classic. The Road to El Dorado. I remember this movie coming out. I never partook.
Yeah. Road to El Dorado is fun. I remember this one, and I definitely did like it. And this and this is a crazy for me because that is not my type of movie. Mm-hmm. Totally, but I'm with it. It's funny. It definitely is funny.
Also, hottest girl animation. The main girl has curves for days. I think Danny Fernandez could play her in a live action movie.
She disagrees with you. Super, super
Danny
sexy. Fernandez. I'll have to look her up on social media.
Yeah. I don't know if you know who she is, Mark. Other thing I also want to add, though, too, on El Dorado, another gif-able movie. There's lots of gifs from El Dorado. Like, the gifs are more popular than the movie. Yeah. There's one of the two together, like, looking at each other. The, you know, yeah, that one. You know what I'm talking about, Lucy. You know what I'm saying. Let's move on to Brad Tazonga. Taken 2008 score is too low. It's one of my favorite action thrillers of all time. Brad, I just want to say to you, sir, I feel what you're saying, but you got like four of them. So I feel like in the like long run, they've kind of like covered the bet. You may have gotten a low score, but you got four movies. There's a lot of movies,
didn't
you know?
We got one movie, then we got a bunch of pale imitations, okay? The original Taken is the only one that I acknowledge is canon, and it is way better. It's 59%. Which is just rotten on the tomato meter. That movie deserves to be way higher. That's a great action flick. Yet, that movie probably made more money than all of this next movies in the canon makes combined, and that's because Linus says The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. These movies don't necessarily make a lot of money, but people love them, except for The Life Aquatic for whatever reason. This is like sort of the one of Wes Anderson's movies that is rotten. It's 57%. The audience, 82%. So I'm just not a huge fan of this style for whatever reason, but I'll enjoy anything with Bill Murray in it.
I'm a fan of this style applied correctly. I think actually Steve Zissou is the perfect place to apply it because he's doing a parody of Jacques Cousteau. The problem with that movie is I feel like Jacques Cousteau is just very outside of, I don't even know how to put it. It was very outside of what was part of the zeitgeist by the time they tried to do that. And so there just wasn't enough people that understood the comedy and what he was parodying. Because like people didn't remember Jacques Cousteau. And so like if he did a Voyage of the Mimi parody, it might have been a little better because that was a little bit more of our generation.
But you know what? I know Jack Daniels about Jacques Cousteau and I effing love this movie. Mm. I'm obsessed with this movie. I actually dressed up as one of the characters, actually one of the like crew members for Halloween. I'm dedicated.
That's a solid costume idea.
It's a solid, really? the red beanie with the like, all you have to do is get like blue nurse scrubs and a red beanie and you're like good to go.
That's actually like very true. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. That is a very low effort costume that works very well.
Also, this movie makes me cry. Like at the end, spoiler alert, Owen Wilson dies in a helicopter crash and it's so sad.
Yeah.
It punches you right in the nuts. I think it's a great movie. I don't know why people don't like it.
Moving on to T. Brown Art, Apocalypto, Martyrs, Out of the Furnace, Sexy Beast, to name a few of my favorites, and Munich at 78%. Come on, gang. You could do better than that. I ain't have anything to do with it, T. Brown Art. I'm just going to tell you that. But of everything that you mentioned, Sexy Beast and Munich are the only ones I can really get on board with. I don't know Martyrs, didn't watch Apocalypto, and got nothing on Out of the Furnace. Mark?
I've never seen Apocalypto. I've heard it's brilliant, but Apocalypto had the misfortune of coming out right when all that stuff happened with its director. And so a lot of people are like, I'm just not even going to bother with this. 65%, it's fresh, but I've heard that movie's like amazing.
Yeah. And no, I've heard that. I think that movie got very much that as far as a critical reception because he didn't waste a minute. He did not care. He put that movie out and then he went away for a while. And now that director can do Father Stew and everybody want to forget. Sorry. I'm sorry.
That weird Santa Claus movie.
Yeah. Well, he can play a, you know, drunken father in a family film.
Yeah. I just watched the scene from Apocalypto because something that really pisses me off in movies or TV shows, when you are getting shot at or the bad guy is trying to muck duck you and you run in a straight line, So Stranger Things, the end season where Arcady Sink, she's like running from Vecna and she's just going in a straight line running to that Kate Bush song out through the portal.
No, you gotta zigzag.
Yeah. She doesn't zigzag. And the whole time he's just like dropping like stones like in a straight line. I'm like, okay, unbelievable. So I watched Apocalypto because there's a scene where he figures it out. He has to run. The main character is running away. And there's two guys that go before him that just run in a straight line and they get totally messed up. And so he's like, okay. And he starts to zigzag. And it's this brilliant scene. And just that alone, just Google it. You don't even have to watch the whole movie.
That's how they teach you how to get away from gators is to zigzag. If you're in Florida, you're on a golf course, you see a gator, just zigzag. And they don't zig as fast as they go in a straight line. That's what I've been told.
Hilarious. Yeah. Hey, Golf Magazine. There you go.
That's why they hire me. Thank you to all of our social media responses, to all of our emailers, to everybody who sent in a video or an audio clip. Thank you. You know that there's people listening, but it's nice to put some names to faces and some faces to names and to just realize not just that there's a lot of folks watching and listening, but that they're all over the world listening to this stuff. It's very gratifying and humbling at the same time. So thank you all for giving us something fun to do. It's one of the best parts of my week is getting to talk movies with my dear friend Jacqueline. And I am raising a glass of iced tea at the moment because it's early, but it'll be something else later to another 100.
I agree. I mean, honestly, Mark, it's really fun that I get to chat with my buddy and talk movies, and that makes it the easiest thing. But for anybody listening to this, I just want to add, there's a host of people besides Producer Lucy, Mark Hoffmeyer, Tim, and Brian, who make this podcast happen. It is a really, really joint and team effort for the entire podcast team, from the executives at the top who help us make this podcast happen, to every single person that works even on-site it, to people like Courtney and Urania. You don't know them, but they do our thumbnails and graphics, to the social kids who post these videos and post all of our stuff. So thank you to all of them. And thank you for all of you for listening. Again, it scares me how many of you all are listening, but thank you. Mark, next week we have, coming up, we have a host of new episodes and a host of new shows and a lot of things that we haven't maybe had the bandwidth to cover yet, we're going to get to cover now. So why don't you tell us what we have coming up in the next few weeks?
This is going to be exciting because we're going to be talking about some rotten Brad Pitt movies. Brad Pitt, who doesn't love Brad Pitt? He's got the Bullet Train movie coming out. He's got quite a six-pack on himself. And I'm excited to talk about Meet Joe Black, not because of the movie itself, because I watched 5 minutes of it and left, but did I pay money to see it 3 times? Yes. Why? Because there was a certain trailer about a galaxy far, far away that was attached to Meet Joe Black when it was released in the Thanksgiving year of 1998. So going to be talking about rotten Brad Pitt movies. And that's what we do here at Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. If you have a beef with the tomato meter, you can email us anytime. rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. So for me, I will say thank you for our hardworking team behind the scenes. I will simply say thank you for making Jack and myself look good. And I will give Jack on the last word here on our 100th episode. Take us home, my lady.
Bye, y'all.